Intervju Radija Študent.
Okay, dobrodošli v intervju Radija Študent. Z nami je Anthony Girjatovič, a.k.a. Mirror Me. Hello.
Hello.
In danes nastopa v klubu Euforija v okviru večera Zero Nesk Night.
Sem prav povedal?
Yep.
Flying Carpet, Zero Nesk Night. In tlele ga bomo zdaj malo zaslišali in da vidimo, kaj ima zapovedati. Ok, so Antonio.
Hello.
Hello, welcome to Slovenia.
Thank you.
Beautiful weather.
Yeah, I can see.
This is not an ordinary spring, but...
the worst weather I've seen.
As the spring of new millennium.
Yes.
Well, there's not much about info about you on the World Wide Web.
I try to keep it hidden, so...
Yeah, we can read that you're a classically trained piano player.
Yeah.
You were born in Chicago.
Yeah.
But you are Polish.
Yes.
Okay. Also, your Facebook profile says that you make music.
Yes, I do.
And your interests are noise and life.
Yes.
So, can you tell us...
Who told you that? No.
Your Facebook profile.
God.
Yeah.
Secret is out.
It's not very...
secretive, right?
Yeah. So, can you tell us a bit more about who you are, where you come from, what do you do?
Oh, wow.
What are your views?
Wow. Well, I was born in Chicago and I moved to Poland 4 years ago. Something about that, to go to college and study. And it was as soon as I moved to Poland, I like stopped playing piano because I didn't have a piano here. So I, you know, and I started listening more to electronically made music, like various kinds, you know, like ambient and like drum and bass and stuff like that. And then I just like downloaded a program, Ableton, and I just started making it. Right.
So what I said, this was 3 years ago.
Yeah. Like, as soon as I came here, probably within a half year, I started messing around with the music, right?
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't until like a year or two later where I actually focused on it, right? Because it was just like, you know, just a hobby, pastime type of thing. It still is a hobby, right? But back then, there was no expectations, nothing, you know what I mean? It was just sitting in my room and making beats. Right?
So you want to say that in these 3 years, when you first started making music, you came to Zenon Records?
No, it was like, when I first started making music, I started messing around with like, you know, like, I tried making dubstep, you know, and
stuff. When was
like,
that?
That was like 3 years ago, right?
Uh-huh.
And it was when I went to a festival, Zora, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Hungary, because I knew of Psytrance, and I went to a few parties and stuff, and it was all right, but I wasn't, you know, it was like any other electronic music or something like that. Although it was a lot more interesting, right? But then when I went to Azora and stuff, I decided that I want to make this music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I started making Psytrance, but it wasn't Zen-esque at the time. It was just, you know, like full-on, typical Psytrance type of stuff.
No, but what it fascinates me is how fast you developed that sound, that mixing skills, sound design skills,
it was actually,
and all that.
It was, because there was this one party that I went to, and it was a progressive Psytrance party, and one of the DJs played, you know, the dark progressive Zenon, right? And it was completely foreign to me, you know, I've never heard anything like it, and I was just standing still listening to it, you know, with a blank stare. And then I asked him afterwards, you know, like, what was that? You know, you blew my mind and stuff. And he told me, you know, like, check out Zenon Records. And I did, and I went and I searched Zenon Records and listened to some of the artists, and I started, you know, like, making, not like that type of music, but like more and more minimal, you know, influenced sounds and stuff. And then a friend of mine from Poland, His name is Michał, and he's Sauron, right? That's his. Aha, he makes music as Sauron. He already had like a release or two releases in Zenon compilations and stuff, and he told me, no, you could send it to Zenon Records and stuff, like a track I made. So I sent it to Sentient, right? And I sent him actually two tracks. Mm-hmm. One of the tracks was a faster one that I made, right? He said it was too fast, but then he listened to the one that the Rabbit Friend, which mm-hmm. is on the compilation.
Which we are the new breed.
Yeah.
And it's
very old track, just so that's made clear. Uh-huh. Not my typical sound anymore, but that was the track that got me into Zenon Records.
By the way, this is the record we are listening right now in the Podlaga, Bering Music.
Yeah? Nice. it was the track where he listened.
Friend of yours, Sauron.
Yeah.
He told you the tricks and stuff, because usually.
No, he didn't do that. He just said go. So he didn't. He just said, yeah, it's good. Send it to Zenon.
No, I mean production.
I learned it myself.
You did it yourself.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, in that case, I think you're like a genius, because usually people spend 3 years just making bass lines.
Well, the thing is that it would have been like 3 years, but I have a lot of free time, right? Because mm-hmm, I didn't have a day job. Mm-hmm. So I would go to school and come back and just all day, you know, mm-hmm, just sit in front of the program and stuff. Mm-hmm. If I had to go to work every day, I'd probably still be making Rabbit Friend, you know, today. So it's a lot, the convenience of my time has played a big role in this.
Definitely fascinating.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, in which college you went to Poland?
So it's called SWPS, Szkoła Wyższa Psychologii Społecznej. It's a higher school of social psychology, something like that. So it's a private college, right? It's not a public one. Mm-hmm. It's a commune, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right.
And how is the psytrance scene in Poland?
Poland?
Yes, I never heard of any producer from Poland, to be honest.
Me and Sauron.
Okay, I didn't know that Sauron is
Yeah, he's
Polish.
From Poland.
Yeah.
He's also from Poland. But other than that, there's no, like, you know, like on an international level, like no one really. But we do have some parties that are organized, but it's, you know, it's still underground.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a student radio station, right?
Mm-hmm.
And actually there was like a live DJ psytrance set like recently, and they do this regularly, like once every 3 months they have a psytrance DJs come in and play music. But other than that, it's still very underground and nobody knows what it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's like 200 people at a party, right? In all of Poland, there's like 1,500 fans of psytrance, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, based on the Facebook, psytrance.pl,
mm-hmm.
PL, right? It's a group, and based on the amount of likes, there's like 1,500, and
mm-hmm.
I'm just assuming that's how many.
Mm-hmm. So we have small parties, no big festivals.
Yeah, you know, we do have some festivals, but they're also pretty small, you know, like 600, 700 people, something like that.
Yeah, it's a certain kind of magic to small.
Yeah, it
festivals.
Is, exactly. It's very, you know,
feeling.
Everyone, you know, you know everyone there, everyone's your friend. It's a perfect atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. One more question about how you learned your skills. Were you, I don't know, using internet forums or?
I actually didn't, even though every time I tried, but I would never be able to find the exact thing I needed, right? And so it would just come down to, there would be sometimes, you know, like a friend would tell me something or I'd find something, or by complete accident, you know what I mean? Just by experimenting, just, wow, this sound is absurd, you know, I'm gonna use it. Something like that, you know, but, various sources of, you know, helping.
And and you probably had to experiment a lot find your sound that you
It wasn't like I sat down and said, I'm gonna experiment now to find my sound.
Yeah.
It was just, I was just making it and the sound developed itself, you know, and it was just like, I couldn't, if I wanted to, I could probably do it, but right now, if I just like sit and make music, it's gonna sound Zenon-y, you know. I can't like not just comes out like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And where do you produce? Do you have a studio?
No, I have a room and studio. I don't have like super professional equipment. I don't have a studio or anything, but I do have studio monitors, that's about it, and a bunch of MIDI controllers that I don't even use. I use my mouse, that's about it, and I, you know, program everything, and I don't even jam when I make the music. See, that's the thing, I, you know, some people, they just like hit record and they just jam.
Mm-hmm.
I that's not my workflow. I actually just precisely use the mouse and, you know, draw envelopes and, you know, so I need it to be perfectly symmetrical.
And you don't have any acoustic treatment in your room?
Nothing.
Nothing?
No. So that's why it sounds so bad. The track you're about to hear.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that, but you are definitely a super fascinating producer.
Thanks, man.
What, do you maybe use any analog gear? You're just more
I had a synthesizer recently. I bought it's not like an analog, but it was a hardware synthesizer, virtual analog, right? So it was digital, but I actually sold it recently because I didn't need it. I used it for like two tracks, and I'm like, okay, really cool, but I could just use a VST, you know, for the same exact thing. And so I just sold it and bought another MIDI controller instead that I also don't use. So. It's all right. I just like the toys, you know, the MIDI controllers. I love them, but I don't really have much use for them unless I'm playing live. That's the only time they'll come in use.
And for these variations of sounds that you use in your music, you just use sound banks and process them, or do you also record sounds via microphone?
Yeah, actually, there's a lot of ways, because I used to... All right, when I first started making, you know, like electronic, I would just use everything in synthesizers, right? And I didn't even, you know, I was like, oh, sample banks, you know, that's absurd, you know? Then I started using samples, right? And resampling them and stuff on my own way. But now the new album that I'm working on, there's pretty much all the sounds are almost like 90% mine, just made samples or recorded. But more so just, you know, I would synthesize something, something really weird, you know, just like a you know, like a weird sound, and then I would just like resample it and just cut out like a little bit of it and stretch it out or whatever and just like mess around with the waveform until I, you know, until I'm like, oh, this is good, you know, this is good. And it usually the effect is, you know, really weird. The music is weird now. If you hear like once the new album comes out, it's gonna be probably not many people will want to listen to it because it's too weird, you know. I'm even listening, like, I don't know if this is listenable to, you know, like, the fuck are these sounds? Sorry, I swore. I'm sorry.
That's okay here. That's
student
okay.
Radio, right? All right. Yeah. Well, it's like, oh, what are these sounds, you know? But hopefully people will enjoy it. I enjoy it, so.
And what I wanted to ask, I just had one question.
Think about another question.
In my mind, yeah, that's the only way. Okay, what I also interested is how do you perceive the problem of internet piracy?
Oh, okay.
Now, many artists around the world complain that nobody's buying music anymore.
Yeah.
That you have to tour so much in order to learn for a living that you don't have time to make music.
Okay.
Which at the end results in a lower quality of music. So what do you think about this? I mean, these are some statements. Like, so how do you comment?
I actually don't care if someone gets my music for free. Because I don't, from the start, I knew I'm not going to make money off of music. That was the first assumption. And if I, like, get a gig, it was already assumed, you know, the only way I could make money off of this is from playing, you know, from playing and traveling and stuff like that. So the assumption is I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to release an album. Five people are probably going to, you know, buy it and the rest are going to listen to it on YouTube or download it or get it from friends. And that's completely fine, you know, as long as they're listening to it. So I don't care, but, personally, I think that music shouldn't be something that is, you know, commercialized, and there shouldn't be money involved at all in the process of creation of any sort of artwork. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter if it's music or poetry or art. I think that, like, it's good if the artist is making money, right? Because he has to, you know, in the society that he lives in. But, you know, that's not, like, the sole purpose of it, I don't think, you know? In like, a utopia, you know, there would be no money involved in any sort of art. That's what I believe, you know. It kind of like cheapens it, you know what I mean? As soon as there's a money involved in like sort of art, it's automatically cheapened. It's not like pure, as pure as it would have been anymore. But that's just my opinion, you know.
Assume a totally different system.
Like the mainstream system assumes differently, right? Like, you know, like commercial music and MTV. MTV doesn't really make music anymore, but You mean like radio stations?
No, I mean like the system in general, not the capitalist world.
Oh, wait, which system?
In order to live without making money.
Oh, yeah. It's true. That's so, it's honestly a blessing that I could, you know, make money involved with music. That is perfect. I have absolutely no complaints. Yeah. But that's also just a result of the way of life, you know, and the place I live in and the culture. So it's really hard to escape from that, you know. And in the end, you have to buy food. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah. Let's say in case we stay in this system, yeah, like capitalist world for another decade.
Oh, no,
forever,
no.
Would you be able to make a living
out of music?
Yes, of the kind of music you're working now.
Well, besides the music, I also teach English, right? Mm-hmm. Freelance, you know, and stuff like that. So that's also somewhat of an income. But if things keep going the way they're going right now, then I could probably humbly, you know, be able to, you know, rent a room, apartment, you know, humbly live, you know, a quiet life. As long as I keep making music, though, that's the key, you know. If I, like, stop making music and then just, like, live off the past successes or whatever, then it's just gonna, you know, degrade. But a friend told me, you know, if I just keep making music, I can stay on the scene for 40 years, you know, just as much. As long as I keep making new music, that's the key, you know.
I remembered what I wanted to ask you earlier. And when you send a track to a master, do you send stems or do you send one individual track?
I send the entire track, mm-hmm, but not master, without any sort of compression. Mm-hmm. Also lower the volume a lot, so it gives the head.
But just
it gives
one track. You don't you don't send just groups.
You mean like from the program, like individual?
Yeah.
No, I actually don't.
Uh-huh.
I actually
just one.
I don't think anybody does that, to be honest. In rock music, they do it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to send the guitars.
Yeah.
You have to send the but in electronic music, I think you just send a wav. You know, 44.1 hertz and. You know.
Yeah, I'm just still really amazed how fast you mastered all this.
It was pretty shocking too, you know.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes too fast.
And okay, so you said your digital audio workstation of choice is Ableton.
Oh yeah.
Ableton Live.
Yeah.
And why? What do you find? The interface.
To be honest, I didn't. I'm sort of biased because I did not try Fruity Loops. I didn't try Logic or any of those other programs. But I did try Cubase. But I just gave up immediately. I just looked in the interface and I didn't understand it. And right after that, I downloaded Ableton, and right away, I just understood where everything was, what to do, and everything. And so the interface was just immediately apparent to me. Mm-hmm. Plus the workflow as just right for me, right? But people have various opinions, you know. There's a lot of fighting going on, which does the best, and I don't really have an. I wouldn't say Ableton is the best, and I wouldn't really say it. I wouldn't rank it in any way. I just like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I heard that you are promising us today or tonight some a live act.
Yeah.
And some kind of whatever that is a true live act is something very rare today.
People usually
just DJ from their
laptops. Yep.
So what is for you a sensible live act?
Uh-huh.
And does your live act setup fulfill your theoretical preferences?
Yeah, that's a good question, because actually when I first started, before I went into Zen or anything, when I first got my first gig in Poland, and the first couple of gigs I played, they were like 100% live act, you know. I would go with my synthesizer, with my APC 40, loopers, everything, and I would literally make an hour-long track on the spot, you know. And before the show, I wouldn't even know what I'd be playing, you know what I mean? It would just be, you know, okay, kick, bass, and then I'd play something on the synth, loop it, add effects, and it would all be done in real time. But it was way too stressful, you know what I mean? It took so much effort for, you know, like 1 hour and stuff, and people don't really notice this. You know, there's like 5 people that notice it, but the majority of people, they just dance, you know, as long as it's good. And the risk of making a mistake, you know, if you make a mistake, there's no music, it's done, you know. So that's higher. So actually I started to try to figure out like more better ways that I can do this. So then I went and just like, I had a few gigs where I just pressed play, you know, and I was like no prepared whatsoever. I just played my tracks, you know. And it was fine because people didn't notice, you know, like, oh yeah, awesome, you know, and dancing. So it was, I'm like, so it gave me like a window that I could do really pretty much anything if I wanted to in terms of live act. So then I started to mess around and I just decided to combine those two things, you know, and I went and extracted parts from my tracks, right? Like I'd have a effects part, 16 bars, you know, and then I would set up and live act, and with my APC 40, I would just, you know, like, trigger clips and stuff like that. And that's pretty much the way I'm gonna be doing it now, although it all depends on how I'm feeling on that day, because if I just don't, because it's also very pretty stressful, you know. So if I just don't feel it, I also have a DJ mix in Ableton, like you said. I have that and I have the other one, and it all depends, right? It all depends. The DJ mix one, I have it so that I have to, like, it's very interesting, the DJ mix one, because it's got a lot of interesting ways that I can mix in my tracks with each other. So both have pros and both have cons, you know, both have their pluses and minuses.
And when
but
you do,
I don't know if anybody really does. I also was interested in this, and I didn't see anybody. There's I don't know. There's probably a few, but I haven't encountered like a live act. You know what I mean? Like there's always like a mixer, a DJ, and maybe someone's playing like a synthesizer.
Yeah, combination of everything.
You know?
Because probably, I mean, the psytrance music is too much produced generated spot.
Exactly. There's way too much. That's the problem I had. You know, there's too. If I did perform it completely live, then it was just very, you know, like
rough mix.
The sound was also, you know, rough mix and bad, but it was also very like, how you say, it was a shallow, you know what I mean? There wasn't too much depth to it because of the fact that if I wanted depth, I'd have to sit a day, you know, and add the depth, you know what I mean? But on the spot, there's only so much you can do, right? So that was the big minus that I had with that.
And so with the live act that you have at the moment, do you try to recreate the songs you made as much as possible, or you also improvise?
Wait, what do you mean by recreate the songs as much as possible?
Like if you go on a rock concert,
they're
playing...
And they just like
they
solo,
just,
they have a guitar solo for
an hour.
They
sound the same
like
as on a CD.
Oh, okay.
So if you're just trying to recreate a song, or you improvise...
Yeah, it's pretty much pretty much that, but at the same time, you're not going to hear the entire song because I'm going to mix in another song, you know, and try to like mix it in perfectly and stuff. And of course, I have, you know, other things besides the mix. I have like a... I just, you know, have to mix it in. I have my MIDI controller, so I have a bunch of effects that'll help me mix it in. I also have a white noise generator, all sorts of things to like help me, you know, get the perfect, so that people won't notice that, oh, you know, like there's no, how you call it, when you sew something, you know what I mean? When you sew, so it's not you that this was like stitched in, you know, that it was like surgically stitched in and stuff. So there's like a flow, you know, and it just like flows from one track to the next. And honestly, that's probably what I'm gonna be doing now because it's the best way and people enjoy it the most, you know, because if they know you and they know your music, then they'll hear it, oh, and they'll be like, oh, I know this track, you know, and they'll enjoy it, you know. But if they hear something completely like new, they... I don't even know, you know what I mean? I'm trying to think that this way is probably the easiest, you know what I mean? Which shouldn't be, you know, like, oh, I'm just gonna do the easiest, but at the same time, while I'm doing this, whenever I make a track now, I do extract things, and I have a bank of all my loops and stuff, and I am working on like that perfect live act where I just have my APC 40 and I just trigger stuff. But that's probably going to be sometime down the road until I'm, you know, mentally able to do that, you know what I mean? It's pretty stressful.
Okay, so about Zeon Records.
Yeah.
There are some very important common denominators to all Zeon artists.
Yeah.
And what do you think is your peculiarity, or how do you different from
other Zeon artists?
From the other Zeon
artists. Or from outside of Zeon. From other Zeon artists within Zeon.
Yes.
Well, I've been told my music is slightly darker than the majority of the Zeon, and it's getting... the common denominator is actually minimal techno, you know what I mean? Lots of minimal techno-infused into psytrance. Very intelligent, you know, intricacies of the rhythm, you know what I mean? Where you can just listen, you can just feel the minimalism, you know what I mean, when you listen to Zeon Records. That's the common denominator. And I really don't know how to answer a question of how I differ from other artists.
I mean, how do you perceive yourself?
Yeah.
Because you're producing your music, you know.
Oh, I'm better. No, I don't know. How do I perceive myself in terms of, let me think. I have to think for a second. Okay. Because I'd say that, okay, first off, you could say that the music I make is really, really dark, you know, like psytrance. At least the stuff on the new album that will be showcased tonight.
When do you expect the release?
It's whenever I'm finished with it and get the mastering and artwork and everything. So Tim said that, Tim, the owner of Zenon, he said, you know, whenever, man. There's just a line, you know. When I do it, it's not gonna be released immediately because there are other releases that have to be done, and there's basically a queue. But whenever, you know, probably this year. Actually, I'm gunning for. I could probably release it before the summer if I really wanted to, but I'm not sure if that'll be the smartest move. I'm thinking of releasing it after the open air season, so that for next year's open air, I'll get booked. You know what I mean? So kind of like a political, strategy.
Also to have some new material for the dance floor.
Which is also like I have to also, you know, like I was supposed to release a. You know, like, it's good to give people, you know, like a free, you know, unreleased something, you know, like on your SoundCloud, free to download WAV, you know, so DJs can also play it at their party and stuff. And I'm getting to that. Like, I actually made the track and everything, and it's ready, but the mastering is still not coming back to me. And as soon as it does, I'm probably just gonna. It was supposed to be on the album, but I'm just gonna give it, you know, so I just don't, like, you know, vanish from the scene, you know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, it's been a year, there's no new music. So I have to, like, regularly give something new, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, if we come back to the question. So, your peculiarity.
Oh, yeah.
Peculiarity,
yes. That I was far away from that. No. I don't know. I make, you'd have to hear it though, you know, because when I make the music, like, I actually, my music is starting to become less and less minimal, you know what I mean? There's still, like, minimal parts in it, but they evolve. I make them evolve to the point where it's, I wouldn't be able to classify it anymore, you know what I mean? Like, there's a track on my SoundCloud, it's just a preview, it's called Clone Collector. And when I listen to that track, I have absolutely no idea how to classify it. Because the idea of Zenon is to release, like, if you can read it on their website, they don't say it has to be minimal, you know what I mean? It just has to be intelligent, you know what I mean? It can't be stupid, you know, full-onic, you know, and stuff like that. It has to have, like, a certain layer of that Zenon, you know, depth to it. And it does. But it's super weird, you know? Just, if you listen to it, it's, like, weird sound design. All it's right. All sound design, you know what I mean? It's just absurd science fiction sound design to the you know, and just sound design in the back. It's like looking at an artwork of something that you have no idea what you're looking at, you know what I mean? That's how I feel when I listen to it.
And on Zenon's side, it also says that the influences of jazz and classical can be heard in your music.
Yeah.
How would you comment on that? What's the jazz?
That's a lie. It's a lie. No, actually, because there was, you know, like, actually, the idea of jazz, you know, like, the idea of complete musical absurdity. That's the idea. Not like, because I did actually have sampled trumpets and saxophones and stuff in some of my tracks, but the jazz influence is more towards the flow of jazz, you know, where it's just like,
You mean the rhythmic patterns?
Not even the rhythmic patterns, because it's not. It's got to be 4-on-4, you know? That's not going to... Jazz patterns won't cut it. But, of course, there are parts, you know? You can make a part where it's just completely arrhythmical or polyrhythmic.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking
or change
of.
The metric, you know, completely, you know? But the classical thing, because I played the piano, right? Mm-hmm. So I have an idea of harmonics and, you know, stuff like that. Because I used to compose on piano. And that gave me a lot of headroom, you know, to actually make electronic music. That's the classical influence. And I also, I didn't say this, but I used to play in a metal band. I used to play metal, right? Mm-hmm. Not a guitar, on a keyboard. Mm-hmm. In a, you know, like a... I don't even know.
But you don't use harmonies in your
No. That's the thing. I can't. I mean, I don't anymore, you know? Yeah. And sometimes I do, you know? Like, sometimes there's going to be a part where it's like a very harmonic note that goes perfectly, you know? Whatever. But I'm not gonna make a whole melody, you know, through a track. It's just, it's too, in my opinion, it's just, it's like, because, you know, the music is everywhere, you know, and I don't have to hit specific notes to present the music. You know, I could just have one weird sound and show it at different frequencies, you know, have that same weird sound, but only at a certain band of frequencies and stuff. And already that's a certain melody, but there's no notes in there, you know, there's no, like, there's no notes at the way people are used to, where you hit a piano key and, you know, you can make a melody. So, yeah, that's pretty much it, you know.
Okay.
Did that make sense? That answer
yeah,
makes sense?
It makes sense, yeah. The last question.
Yeah.
How do you see or imagine Psytrance and Psytrance festivals in about, I don't know, 50 years from now on?
Non-existent. No, I don't know. Probably I would think that it's, hopefully it's not gonna be on the radio stations, you know, like hopefully it's not gonna be completely mainstream. But then on the other hand, if it goes mainstream and everybody's suddenly listening to Psytrance, I don't know, I probably wouldn't care. I'd probably still be making music, but I'd, you know, it would still be my own music, you know what I mean, regardless of what people listen to. Maybe the drug problem of Psytrance festivals will either escalate more within 50 years or maybe completely drop down within 50 years, you know, who knows.
Do you by any chance have any wet dreams about about Psytrance festival with, I don't know, shitloads of speakers everywhere?
Oh my god.
People dancing on a jetpack.
What? The most absurd vision of it. That's really cool. Maybe, you know, but the speaker part,
yeah.
Not the jetpack, that's just out of the blue. Just robots dancing, you know. No, that's the way, you know, like in about 50 years when machines take over the world, then it's going to be robots going to Psytrance parties.
Yeah, you will just send your slave robot to the party and you will channel, you will get through some channels the feelings.
Yeah,
body.
No, you'll be connected to the robot, right? And he'll just be dancing and you'll be in your capsule, you know what I mean? And speakers. And you can't go deaf, right? Because the robot, you know.
Alright, do you have any last words for our listeners and potential guests today?
Well, I'm inviting everybody to come to Euphoria Club. I'll be playing at 1 a.m., right? 1:30, I don't know, I don't even... 1:30, yeah, something like that. And you hopefully you'll have a good time and, you know, continue living life. Other than that, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anthony, for Mirror Me, for this interview.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, Bojan Gaši, for bringing here to Slovenia.
Yeah, it's a very nice guy.
And, well, see you. Vidimo se. Danas večer u klubu Euphoria.
See you tonight.
Adio.
Thank you.
Intervju Radija Študent.